what was called. I remember stepping onto the floor with these Puerto Rican guys and taking off their jackets, and then when they set their jackets down, you'd hear clunk, 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 and you wondered what they were setting down. And I also remember playing with them and just thinking, my. Caucasian individuals interact with our African American neighbors, and one of the things that you'll find out if you get to know their background, their experiences, their story, is that they view their heritage as African Americans here differently. So they think through historical pieces of their narrative in ways different than I do as a Caucasian. For example, slavery, as we know, ended the abolition of slavery in the late 1800s after the Civil War. But their ancestry, great-great-grandfathers and grandmothers, were slaves. Beyond slavery, you have sharecropping, which was essentially, for the African-American, their heritage. You rented property from the white landowner, and then the price was elevated to where you could never pay, and you continued on not paying the debt that you owed for the sharecropping owner. So they moved from sharecropping, and then they stepped into another point of their history, is that they dealt a lot with lynching. So can you imagine in your own country living with the terror of knowing that I could be ganged up on, grabbed, and hung? Terrorized up until, you know, 1930s, 40s, 50s, that was occurring in the South in the United States. So they think through their heritage just a little bit differently than I do as a Caucasian individual. And we also, and we understand that some of those tensions within our culture that have arisen even in the last few years are justified. How in the world do we form a multi-ethnic unity and step into those spaces and come together and reconcile at a larger level? How does the gospel shape us or move us toward a more God-honoring relationship with our brothers and sisters across different ethnic and racial divides? In Ephesians 2, 11 to 22, I think we get a little bit of a help from the Apostle Paul about this very question. He actually gives us two ways that we can bridge these broader divisions. And he's talking to a couple of different groups from different ethnic backgrounds. He's talking to Jews and Gentiles who are very far apart. And he offers two ways the gospel helps reconcile different groups. So at the end of Ephesians 2, I'm going to read through 11 to 22. Here we'll discuss the whole paragraph. But at the end, he gives this grand vision of what that could look like. Okay, so here's his vision. So then, you who are foreigners and non-citizens, he's talking to the Gentile believers there, now you are fellow citizens with the saints and members of God's household. And now he's going to build this fantastic image, which is the image of a temple. That's the metaphor he's going to be using here. Because you have been built on the foundation of the apostles and the prophets with Jesus Christ himself as the cornerstone of this building. So he's drawing on Old Testament imagery, talking about the temple and saying, we are the new temple as believers in Jesus Christ. And he says, in him, verse 21, the whole building being joined together grows into a holy temple in the Lord, in whom, Jesus, you also are being built together into a dwelling place of God in the Spirit. So there are a couple occasions in the Old Testament where, whether it was the tabernacle or the temple, when it was finished and God was pleased with the work of the Old Testament of the Israelites, the glory of God showed up in a powerful way and it blew everybody away. And Paul is actually pulling on that imagery right here, talking about different ethnic groups coming together under the banner of Jesus Christ. A unified entity, a unified space, singular space with all of the multi-ethnic diversity. So you've got unity and you've got diversity and the glory of God present. And that's what Paul is after. That's the objective. How do we get there? So backing up, starting in verse 11, he's going to give us two ways that we can move towards this beautiful imagery of a singular, united, multi-ethnic building. The first way that God brings unlikely peoples together is found in 11 to 13. So just to give you a little bit of background, he's writing probably the Ephesians. Okay, who are the Ephesians? Think about that with me for just a second. There were multiple, this is Greco-Roman times, first century in Asia. And Ephesus was one of the three largest centers of Roman power in that ancient world. So you had Rome, Ephesus, and then Corinth was also a big city, but I don't think it was the top. Anyway, it was one of the top three. So a typical person in the Ephesian church viewed himself as, I'm Ephesian, and I am wealthy. More than likely, he or she was a wealthy individual. They had some prestige, some honor, and honor was actually worth more than money back then, just because of where they lived. And Paul is talking to these Ephesians, and pay attention to the way he speaks to them, okay? More than likely, they're pretty prestigious individuals, and he says the following, therefore, remember that formerly you, the Gentiles in the flesh, so I'm reading a pretty wooden translation, but I want to bring out some of the ways that he's speaking to them, okay? It's called the NET Bible. You who were Gentiles in the flesh, who are called uncircumcision by the so-called circumcision that is performed on the body by human hands, so he's using pretty strong language, that you are at that time without the Messiah, alienated from the citizenship of Israel. How does the Ephesian feel right now as he's reading that? Strangers to the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in the world. He's speaking strongly. Now in Christ Jesus, you who used to be far away have been brought near by the blood of Christ. So right away, he's kind of minimizing their social standing that they would have just viewed themselves this way. I'm an Ephesian. I am a Roman citizenship. I have authority, prestige, power, honor, and you're reminding me that I came to Christ. And what happens when they had come to Christ? They were brought low. Why? Because they were sinners separated from God. This says helpless. Is that a real nice term to talk about someone? Helpless. Without God, without hope, before Jesus. Different translation. That's the NIV, but you get the same sense of the text. So Paul is saying, pay attention to your low status. As a point of they view themselves as a point of reference. They were kind of up here, right? And everybody else was down here. Now, I don't want to take this illustration too far because I actually was on a prom court. But you know how at your schools, in the morning, they make the announcement who's going to be on the prom court? And everybody's like pretending like they don't care, but they do. Right? Maybe I'll get selected, but I don't care. And then the individuals that get selected to the prom court, many of them, is it still a popularity contest? It was 20 years ago. Okay. All right. Still that. They're a little bit up here. That's how the Ephesians sort of viewed themselves. You know, you have these different categories for those people around you, the popular people. The Ephesians were the popular people, and Paul said, hey, you know what? When you came to Christ, you had to first realize the tables were turned on your reality. You thought you were here, and you were actually here. The playing field was leveled. So the prom king and the prom queen, or the court, thought they were cool in Ephesus, but then the tables got turned on them, and they were actually low, without God, without hope in the world. They viewed the Jews as atheists, as a weird backwoods, backwater minority nation that didn't have any power and prestige, and actually the tables got turned. And that story of creation, fall, redemption in Christ Jesus was the true paradigmatic story for their reality. The tables were turned. And in verse 13, in Christ Jesus, you who used to be far away have been brought near by the blood of Christ. So the story of true believer is the recognition that I was far away from God. But I turn from sin toward Jesus Christ in faith, resting in his death in my place for the forgiveness of sins. That's the conversion story that those of us who placed our faith in Christ have experienced. And the tables get turned on the way that we view the world and our reality. In order to be saved, you have to get off of whatever pedestal you might put yourself on in order to earn your way to God and realize there's no way you can earn your way to God. And yet, some of us get knocked off the pedestal. Others of us, you know, it's a process. Would we eventually come down and recognize that we need help, we need salvation, we're lower than we thought we were? So you might be asking yourself the question, well, why is Paul talking about this in relationship to this unified, multi-ethnic entity that we call the temple? In verses 19 to 22. I think the reason he's introducing this step down and a lowly posture to talk about multi-ethnic unity is because remembering my lostness, especially if I come from a place where I may consider myself to have a certain level of prestige, remembering my lostness makes me humbler. As white Americans, those of us who are white, we have power, wealth, honor, respect. Whatever the reasons for that, this text assures us we actually start far, far away from God. And we need salvation in Christ. Paul is saying to the Ephesians, remember your low beginnings. You thought you were up here, tables got turned. So, just to give you a point of reference, when I walk in to play basketball with a group of Latin kings, a lot of them good guys, just unfortunate circumstances. If I approach that ministry opportunity with a posture of, oh, these poor guys, see where I am? I'm on a pedestal, looking down my nose at them, which is totally inappropriate. Multi-ethnic unity in the work of the gospel ultimately ending in a unified temple isn't going to happen with that posture entering into a room. But if I step into that space and say, I was lost, and now I'm found. God help me. How do you think that'll work out towards multi-ethnic unity? I think it's big. I think that's what Paul is getting after. So it helps us, makes us humbler. I had to look at that twice on Google because I wanted to say more humble, but it's actually grammatically correct to say humbler. Do you know that? Yeah, shaking his head. He knows. Remember, my restoration, it also helps me remember my restoration to God is primary. And there are all kinds of secondary and tertiary, maybe loyalties that I have or the Ephesians had back then, Roman citizen, honor, prestige. Those are secondary items that I need to set aside and stay off my pedestal in relating to those around me. What do I mean by that? I had a conversation with an African-American, or no, it was in the book Inside Outside, Insider Outsider by a black pastor named Brian Laritz. And he said that every categorization of, for him, in his understanding of his heritage in the United States, of we just need to get back to the good old days in the United States of America is so mind-boggling for an African-American. What good old day? Slavery? Shareholding? Lynching? redlining in the cities, forced into like the slum? What era do I want to go back to? And I have to ask myself the question as I'm listening to my African-American brother in Christ, am I willing to accept oppression in my country, started and rooted in me on my pedestal as a white American? Also, I thought about the Puerto Ricans in that environment that I was playing basketball with. Many of them were pushed into a situation where they didn't even want to come to the United States. Again, there was a whole lot of complexity in some of those stories, but I needed to step into those spaces and say, I'm going to set aside my national pride, just set it aside to relate with someone, staying off of my pedestal for the advance of the gospel and the ultimate goal of multi-ethnic unity. Paul's first way. Well, I would just challenge you with this. Ask open-ended, honest questions of individuals that come from different ethnic backgrounds than you. Of tell me your experiences and just listen. Just listen. That's a great start. I asked, for example, an African-American man in our church if his experience of Brian Laritz's comment was true. The good old days of going back to some era in the United States that would have been better. And he said, absolutely. I can identify with that statement. So I just asked about his experiences, and I sat across from him, and I tried to listen in humility. I've got a long way to go, but that was a great first step towards building this multi-ethnic, unified entity that we call the new temple or the church. Paul's first way is remembering your lostness and coming down off of your pedestal. The second way is in verses 14 to 18. So I'm going to read those. For he is our peace, the one who made both groups into one and destroyed the middle wall of partition, the hostility, when he nullified in his flesh the law of commandments and decrees. He did this to create in himself one new man out of two, thus making peace, and to reconcile them both in one body to God through the cross, by which the hostility has been killed. And he came and preached peace to you who are far off, and peace to those who are near, so that through him we both have access in one spirit to the Father. So again, the image that Paul is toying with and he's moving towards is this diverse but unified temple where the glory of God comes. And he's introduced it by talking about the important step